I first got into magic, it was an underground phenomenon.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of Pursuit of Knowledge. My name is Steve. My co-host on the other end of this Skype conversation is Kira.
Hi.
That's Kira. We decided that we wanted to do a podcast about magic, and when I thought about what to do a podcast about magic about, I thought that just doing it with myself was going to be pretty boring. So when I went looking around for people who would help me podcast about magic, because I really love talking about magic, you can ask anybody I know.
It's true.
It's gotten to the point where I've received death threats, nasty glares, all sorts of things of the like. Anyway, Kira, why don't you go ahead and tell them about your relationship with magic?
I hate it. Stop and I hate it. And it's stupid. And it steals all Steve's time. not a big fan. I have sworn to never actually play. Unfortunately, I think that's down the drain at this point.
I'm pretty sure it is, because I have borne witness to you flopping cards on several occasions now.
Secret.
But so, when I was coming up with something that I thought might be interesting to podcast about, I mean, I'm just some jerk-off who likes to play Magic. I haven't actually done anything of import yet. So you really don't have much of a reason to listen to me. But I thought it would be interesting if I had a partner, and we could do something that I'd never actually seen on MTGCast or anything else, where I would take somebody who was a complete noob to the game and try to walk them through being not so terrible at the game. So Kira was the person I know who knew the least about the game, so she was a perfect candidate. She also likes to hear herself speak, which also a great thing for this sort of project. So here on Pursuit of Knowledge, I'm going to lay down all the things that I know about magic. I'm going to try to teach Kira to be as good as magic as she possibly can. And hopefully you come along for the ride, you learn some things, or at least you're amused by our ineptitude. Whatever you get out of it, you get out of it, man. You know, I'm not telling you how to enjoy us. You take us as you like. So that's the purpose of the show. Anything you want to add before we move on?
Not really. I think you got it all covered pretty well.
Okay. So then, where we are in terms of magic development, like I said, I've been playing again for about a year.
I've been playing for about a week. I played two times.
Three. You played three times. Well, you played three games over two sessions.
Yeah.
We started off with the Garrok versus Liliana dual decks. Because they're pretty basic, you know, it's like play a dude and then attack with a dude and then play a dude again. And did two games with those, and then the other day we did, I built a green-white little kid good stuff deck that I enjoy quite a bit. Stoneforge Mystics, Behemoth Sledges, Baneslayer Angels, Wolfbriar Elementals, and that sort of thing, and played it against the stock vampire list. I gave her the green-white deck, and she kicked my ass pretty hard, which I don't know if that speaks more towards my abilities as a deck builder, or just the fact that I'm still really bad at this game. But that, up till this point, is basically the entirety of Kira's experience with the game.
Except for that thing that happened a few years ago.
Except for that thing that happened
that
a few
guy.
Years ago. Anyway, I've been trying to convince her to play Magic for basically as long as I have been back playing Magic, because I think she would be very good at it, because she's quite smart. And I know she's got a very competitive nature, which is good for, you know, high-end magic play. Also, if you couldn't make this out so far from listening to her, she is a girl. see, that laugh should assuage any fears that you might have had that she wasn't. And I, those of you who hang out on the competitive magic scene know that females who play high-end magic enjoy a wealth of advantages. If there's one thing that competitive magic players love, it is free wins. And I tell you what, girls can get free wins so, so very easily, even without trying to. But if you try to, they're just going to roll in like you would not believe. So I thought that she had great potential to be a really good magic player. And now we're going to see if it's actually going to work. Like I said, I'm a PTQ grinder, if we go by the psychographics that Mark Rosewater has laid down. I would probably say I'm about 20% Timmy and about 10% Johnny and about 70% Spike. I like kicking ass more than anything else. Kira, I wanted to lay these down for you and see if you had any idea. Again, you don't have a whole lot of experience yet, but there's three player psychographics that Wizards uses to describe people who play Magic and why they play Magic. They are Timmy, Johnny, and Spike. So I just wanted to relate them to you and see if you had one that you think sounds most like you. Timmy is interested in playing huge dudes. He likes seeing numbers that are really big. He likes beating people to death with enormous, awesome things. Remember that Kulizek guy that I showed you that came out? That is like the ultimate Timmy card. He's enormous and ridiculous, and if you don't do something about him, he will kill you all by himself. And then there's Johnny. Johnny is the combo guy. He likes doing ridiculous, not necessarily playing just cards that are huge or ridiculous, but he likes coming up with card interactions that other people don't know about. He is the guy who will play a 150-card deck to get a combo online that uses 9 different cards that just does something silly like make infinite sapperlings or, you know, make you draw your entire library, and then he plays a rune player trap on you so you take damage equal to all the cards in your hand. You know, things like that. And then there's the Spike, and Spike is the guy who is very high-end, or who likes to be competitive, who is more worried with how efficient or brutal a card is rather than whether it's a, quote, more fun card. They like to win however they can win. Obviously not cheating, but, you know, they are not, you know, they play to win. Having fun is nice. Having a good conversation is nice. But winning is really why they play. So which one do you think you would probably fall into at this early stage?
Well, I'm pretty competitive, that's for sure. I would like to be that second one, but I don't know that that's very likely.
Johnny, the one who comes up with all the crazy interactions?
But I don't see how likely that is, especially at this point.
Right, that's something that often only comes when you have most of the cards memorized, and you're just sitting around, you know, you're on the can or whatever, and you're like, oh my god, that would work amazingly. So that probably won't come along for a little while until you start to, you know, catalog all these cards. They're probably spikier, but again, it's kind of hard to tell, because, again, after a total of 3 matches, and that's part of the thing that I wanted to get from this was I didn't want to oversaturate her with stuff before we started. I just wanted her to have enough knowledge to know when I was discussing things, you know, she wasn't completely lost. A lot of terminology is still pretty new to you, I know. For example, you do not tap lands.
No, I sideways trees.
Exactly. it'll be a learning experience. But so the thing about this is, since we're starting at such a basic level, if you people who are listening to this have always been a kitchen table kind of player and you'd like to get better, you know, maybe start winning some FNMs, rocking some PTQs, that kind of stuff. Probably going to be, at least at first, talking about a lot of things that seem almost second nature to you, but without a really consistent baseline level for theory, a lot of the higher level stuff, you know, it's kind of like how you can't, you know, if you haven't taken a math course in a couple of years, you can't just jump into calculus without reviewing all your algebra. Because all this stuff builds on itself. Or maybe you have a friend who would like to learn how to play, but you don't feel like going through that awkward fumbling around stage where everybody's just playing like awful, awful cards because you don't know any better, you don't have them, which is the way that we all learned back in the day of Mirage, you know, when Lion's Eye Diamond was a terrible 20-cent card and, you know, Curd Ape was banned because it was too powerful, that sort of thing. I'm very interested to see how someone who is actually tutored by someone who is trying to make them terrible right off the bat will turn out, rather than, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you probably at first fumbled around with, you know, you thought your 4 crawlworm deck was the best thing ever and, that sort of stuff. And we all did. It's nothing to be ashamed about. But we're going to try to leapfrog right over that period and see how it goes. So first I wanted to talk about some things that came up in our early games. The first thing I have written here is decisions. You tend to have a problem making them.
But that applies to every stage of my life, not just Magic, so you really can't blame me.
That's true, but Magic is probably one of the easiest places, I think, to overcome that that paralyzing fear, because Magic is all about decisions. It's all about decisions trees. And the other thing that I've tried to drill into her head from day one, and everybody should realize from day one, is that everybody is really, really bad at this game, and you're going to make decisions that are really bad. Even the best players in the world make awful decisions all the time. Pat Chapin was drafting at the Pro Tour 2 weekends ago, and he took a Razor Boomerang over a Ruin Ghost in Pack 3, when the Ruin Ghost probably would have been the most powerful card that he could possibly have been passed, because he had a triple Hedron Crab deck at the time, and he just kind of brain farted and misevaluated and picked a Ruin Ghost. And everybody who was sitting around watching this was kind of like, oh my god, what did you just do? But he's Patrick goddamn Chapin. He's easily one of the best Magic players in the world. He just made one really terrible decision. It happens a lot, so don't be too worried about it. And I think she got better in that in the last game that we played, which was kind of a marathon session. It was only a single game, but it lasted, like, well over an hour. because there are so many things when you play this game as much as I do and just, like, think about it. You know, like, I have Magic dreams and all kinds of weird stuff. But so many things are so basic that you kind of forget what it's like to be a new player and when the terminology and stuff doesn't make sense to you and you don't automatically know rules like, you know, you attack before you drop your land and play your spell. So just trying to walk her through all that and give her a good basis for decisions before, at the same time that we were trying to play, you know, took a little while. But I think that I was telling her the other day that even though she's only played 3 games, I think she has a much better already grasp on the fundamentals of the game than the high school kids who should have been showing up to our FNM for the last couple of weeks. Because they, you know, they're stuck in, and again, almost everybody starts that way, but that area where, like, man, I only have one Megrim. I really wish I could get my hand on, like, 3 more Megrims, because then I could do this thing with these 2 Mind Rots that I have. And you're just making terrible decks, and card availability is a huge problem. You know, even though she's got 3 games to there, I don't know, probably dozens, hundreds, whatever, I think the fact that she's actively trying to learn to not be bad and will make her pretty good at the end. The second thing I wanted to bring up from the early games was, all 3 games that we played, I had my ass handed to me. Like, none of them... The third game was relatively close, I think, where I felt kind of bad because she was playing a green-white deck, and I had a Malakir Blood Witch in my hand, and I played the Blood Witch thinking, like, oh, now I've got it. And then she dropped a Master of the Wild Hunt, and then a Wolfbriar Elemental kicked twice, and all of a sudden, with a Behemoth Sledge on the board, and all of a sudden my Malakir Blood Witch was doing absolutely nothing, and I died very quickly. Which just, I wanted to bring to the forefront that everybody, no matter how much practice you have at this game, whatever, you're going to lose sometimes. You're going to lose to people who aren't as good as you. nothing against you, but, you know, you've played 3 games to my, you know, I play that many before I get up and go to work in the morning in my head.
You think so, he's not joking?
No, not really, I'm not. I get in, like, car accidents driving to work and stuff because I'm trying to build new EDH decks or whatever. The third thing that arose during our pretest games was shuffling, which...
I can't do it.
Yeah. I really tried.
Shuffling, my tiny girlish hands are too weak.
She wanted to play without sleeves, but I told her that that's a bad idea. You never want to not play without... Or you never want to play without sleeves. Sleeves are great. But shuffling, and one of the things that she said to me was, like, does it, you know, she did a couple, like, really weak-ass shuffles. And she was like, well, that's good enough, right? And I had to, you know, and I told you that it was not, because shuffling is actually a deceptively, incredibly important thing. Not only can you get in trouble at high-level play for not shuffling properly, but also your deck won't work right if you don't shuffle properly. So I'm trying to come up with a good way, like a decent, you know, like, practice gauntlet, to try to teach people how to shuffle. Another one of my friends, when we started playing again, he could not shuffle. To say it was absolutely ludicrous, like, how much trouble he had with shuffling, but I just kept hitting him and berating him until eventually he got good enough to it that he can now do it without, you know, like, doing the comedy 52-card pickup thing that you see in old movies where they just go flying in the air or, you know, with ruining his cards or my cards or whatever. But shuffling is a very important thing. Never forget that. And if you're teaching somebody how to play, also make sure they don't forget that either. And then the last bit was something that Kira wanted me to throw on here. So you can go ahead and speak on this all on your own. I'll have my part.
You have to have some part of it, because I don't know where you got that stupid wallpaper.
I got it from the official Magic the Gathering site, usually about once a week. They do a wallpaper of the week that you can download. And I have, at my house, we have a Media Center PC where we, you know, watch television hooked up to, or we watch, you know, television shows or downloaded anime, whatever, on my television. And when M10 came out, or shortly thereafter, I downloaded the Vampire Nocturnus wallpaper.
Well, first of all, I initially had a problem with it because saying something is a night vampire is kind of the most redundant, most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I'd just like to bring that up against Steve, who's rolling his eyes. But then I noticed that it was actually not even spelled right. And I have to say, I lost even more respect for the game when I saw that it was a Vampire Nocturnos on his screen. But he still won't take it down.
There is a typo on the Vampire Nocturnus wallpaper that they released when M10 came out. There is an extra O in there. I didn't realize it at first. I partially keep it up because I really like the art for the non-promo version of Nocturnus. The promo version looks like a guy in his 40s who works an unfulfilling job and can't get an erection anymore. He's balding. It's really sad and pathetic. Unfortunately, the only four Nocturnuses I own are the promo ones, because I didn't do that whole, I'm going to buy three or four of the regular ones when they're $3 a piece because vampires are going to be good. I often say things like that and don't follow through with them. But anyway, the other reason that I keep it there, besides the fact that the art is sweet, is because every single time I turn on the computer and the image comes up, she makes this funny groaning noise, which amuses me to no end.
That's at least, what, like 3 times a week?
Oh, yeah, at least. So those were the things that came up during our early play test sessions, and even before we started playtesting. Really important things. The extra O in there. We are also, by the way, I'll have you know, we're both grammar and spelling Nazis. So it kind of bothers me, too. Not as much, for some reason. I don't know. I think it's funnier than anything else. Did you ever write that email to them, by the way, telling them that they spelled something wrong on a wallpaper they released 7 months ago and haven't thought about since?
Yeah, well, you know what? A lot of people are looking at it and are thinking, oh my, those guys really should have looked at that before they posted it up there. I mean, you can't take that back, Steve.
It's true. It's out there on the internet now in Nocturnus.
Well, you know what? That guy should be fired. Or at least strongly reprimanded.
Actually, I did want to speak about one other thing real quick. We settled on Pursuit of Knowledge because names for podcasts or anything magic-related articles, whatever, are inherently hilarious to me when they are the name of a card, because like most nerds, I have a huge hard-on for puns. So I originally went looking for names of cards that might be pretty good, and Pursuit of Knowledge, I thought, was pretty good. It fit pretty well with what we're trying to do here. It's also a card from way back in the day when I first started playing. For those of you who are unaware, because honestly, why would you know what the hell Pursuit of Knowledge does? It was from Stronghold. It costs 3 and a white. It's an enchantment. If you would draw a card, you can put a study counter on Pursuit of Knowledge instead and skip drawing your card. You can then remove 3 study counters from Pursuit of Knowledge and sacrifice it, and you can then draw 7 cards. So actually a really bad card. It's almost like a quest, the new ones from Zendikar, way before they had quests or Zendikar. But it's iffy, you know. It's really easy to get blown up, and then you lose a lot of card advantage, which is a thing we're going to talk about later. How about that for some foreshadowing? Then I also thought about other puns that we might use. I thought Podcastigate was pretty funny. I'm also a big Orzhov fanboy. I like that card a lot. We also thought with going with the really meta angle and going with a witty name of podcast. But everyone we know to whom we put the question decided the Pursuit of Knowledge was the best way to go, so I guess we could go with Pursuit of Knowledge instead of Woody Name of Podcast. If you really feel that strongly about it, though, and you think Woody Name of Podcast is a lot better, let us know via email or whatever, and maybe we can retroactively change the name of our show.
But if you email us asking what would be the witty name of the podcast, then we're just going to, you know,
roll our eyes.
You.
And, exactly, and you're never allowed to listen to our show again. on to actual content. I thought the first thing that I would run down would be colors and what colors do, because it's kind of a basic thing, but it's something that R&D has really tried to push over the last couple years when they're not completely crapping all over it like they did with Planar Chaos, which was an entire set where they took everything that they had done to define the colors and their roles within the game over the last 10, 15 years. We're just like, yeah, we're going to throw all that out the window, do away with everything that we worked towards, which I thought was fun because... but a lot of people really hated it. But this sort of thing is important for deck... It's really basic, but it's important for deck construction because it makes you think about what you're trying to do with your deck and where you think you can look to do that sort of thing then. I call this the color wheel. That's what we called it back in the day. Mark Rosewater started calling it the color pie at some point in the last 10 years, and that seems to be the preferred nomenclature now. But I hate that vernacular for some, because the pie, like, it doesn't, like, pie would indicate that, like, there's no, like, overlap to me. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, a pie has very defined slices, where if you look at it as a wheel, like, there might be some bleed over. I don't know. I'm a syntax semantic.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, the color wheel, you can, you know, like, you have blendy together
colors.
Right,
exactly. You can blend together, like, an artist palette or whatever. But the pie is very, you're not, like, taking a pie and then, well, first of all, there's no, like, no pie is, like, you don't have a pie that's five different pies. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. Like, they're all blueberry.
Exactly, right. The whole, it's, exactly. See, you're getting it. I only hope that somebody did. I'm glad to know that you did. So, I'm just going to run down the colors, some stuff that is notable about them, things that they do well. We're going to start with white. White is the color of weenies, which means small, efficient men, not just men, creatures. There's also something else I wanted to mention, which to a newbie might be kind of weird. There are so many ways to refer to creatures other than creatures. There's dudes, men, animals, guys. So, you know, I'm not trying, if I call a guy, you know, a dude or a man, I'm not trying to be discriminatory or whatever. That is just,
I can't call them ladies.
Exactly. That also is, I'm really going off tangent already, but, like, in general, I would refer to creatures as dudes or guys or men or whatever. Like, when you see the art of a card, you're referring to one specifically, it's usually you can look for the boobs and then determine whether it's a male card or a female card, right? It's really not that difficult.
I don't know. There's been some that we disagree on, Steve.
That's true. There are a couple. But by and large, you can... Like, there's some of them there's no question. And yet a lot of, like, pros just refer to everything as a guy. Like, when they're discussing... Like, Stoneforge Mystic was easily one of my favorite cards out of World League. In fact, I just got my playmat of her yesterday. Love the card to death. Loved it before I even saw it. And then I saw the art, and the art is also amazing, right? And it had its big breakout at the Pro Tour 2 weekends ago. It was in LSV and Tom Ross's and the whole Channel Fireball crew's Naya deck, and it also showed up in a couple white weenie decks and stuff. And I was very excited because I really like that card, and I like to see it do well. But then all these players in their coverage and their reports of the Pro Tour said, a Stoneforge Mystic is really great. He does blah, 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 blah. There's no way you can confuse that one for a guy. They do it to Knight of the Reliquary. They do it to Harabaz Druid. Just one, and it's, I don't know, it's just a pet peeve of mine also. I mean, you can
quite
very...
frankly offended.
I wouldn't even go that far. It's just like, it's not that hard. I mean, you can just look at it. Like, I don't know, I catalog, the easiest way for me to recognize cards is by thinking of the art. And when you think of the art for, like, Knight of the Reliquary, very clearly has a rack on her. So I don't think there should be, like, any question as to whether people call her a guy or use, you know, the pronoun he. That just bothers the crap out of me. Anyway, back to white. White is good at little men. It is the color of protection. Protection is a really cool ability that confuses a lot of new players because it seems like a lot of things that you'd think that protection would, for example, stop a card of that color from killing that card, right? That just seems kind of intuitive.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's not always the case. Protection actually stops things from being targeted. It stops them from taking damage. And it means it can't be enchanted by a thing. So if there's a card that does none of those things, it can still be killed by that card. So a classic example is Black Knight has protection from white. But Wrath of God, or nowadays Day of Judgment, you damn kids, is a card that says destroy all creatures. It's white. So intuitively you would think the Black Knight would not die to Wrath of God, but it does. Because it says all, it's not targeting anything, it's not doing any damage, and it's not enchanting it. It says destroy all creatures, therefore the Black Knight dies to it. This is something that's really hard for people to pick up on at first.
That's really sneaky.
It is. Yeah, really hard for a lot of people to pick up. So try to keep that in mind. That was something that, I forget if I had already brought that up to you or not.
I don't think so.
It might have been out of the scope at first, but that is something to keep in mind.
Do they have a card that will make sure that nothing can touch you at all in any way?
There is no ability or card that keeps a permanent creature or whatever from being completely untouchable. There any way that I would use to get rid of one of your guys, you have a way to keep me from doing it, but they're all more specific answers. For example, there is a card from M10 called Indestructibility. It's an enchant. I forget if it's an enchant creature or an enchant permanent, but either way, whatever you put it on, an enchant becomes indestructible. Indestructibility is a different ability that I don't think came up in any of our games, but I was mentioning it to you the other day in an email. It means that destroy effects and effects that deal lethal damage don't kill it. However, it doesn't stop it from being removed from the game or exiled, as they changed it to this summer. It also, an interesting thing is, if you have abilities that give negative to toughness, like, for example, Infest is a card for 1BB, it's a sorcery, all creatures get -2/-2 till end of turn. Global negative effects like that, they're not doing damage, they're lowering toughness, so they also get through protection. So
if you run out of toughness, will you die like in D&D?
Exactly. If a creature hits 0 toughness, it dies just like it had taken lethal damage, except it also gets through indestructibility. Even if something is indestructible, hitting 0 toughness still makes it die. So one of the more interesting things about the games, this game, especially in recent years, is they've really diversified the ways to get rid of permanents and other problem cards. There's, you know, there's like dozens of ways to deal with almost everything nowadays. And then there's also a lot more protections and things to keep those creatures from dying. So it's a lot more of kind of a rock, paper, scissors kind of game than it was so years ago when basically all you had was destroy and protection.
Yeah. So there are ways to keep from everything, but not all at the same time. It'd be better to have little individual things for specific situations.
Right,
yes?
Exactly. Okay. There's, like, things that are indestructible can be exiled. Things that have protection from a color can be killed with a different color, or something that is colorless, or the global effects can get rid of them. For example, there's certain cards, there's one called Great Sable Stag. We didn't really do much with counter spells yet, but Great Sable Stag says right in its box that it can't be countered. So when you're playing a Great Sable Stag, you can't use a spell that says counter-target spell on it. You're just not allowed to. But there are things that work a lot like counter spells. Mindbreak Trap is a more recent one. But instead of actually countering the spell, it says exile that spell. Since that technically isn't countering the spell, you can still hit a Great Sable Stag with that. Again, I can see you smiling through it all. It's all very sneaky. Most of this game is forcing your opponent to think that they're safe from something, and then you go, ah, ha, 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 and then you screw them over anyway. So yeah, there's pretty much ways to get around almost everything. And it's kind of like, I got you. No, I got you. I got you. No, I got you back. Ha, ha, ha. No tag backs. So white is the most prolific protection color. White is also one of the two colors that does life gain effects. Well, I shouldn't say one of the two colors. It's one of the two main colors that do life gain effects. And life gain effects are something that a lot of new players really get into because they think that, oh man, if I just gain like 100 life, he'll never be able to kill me. Ha ha ha. But life gain spells are great when they're stapled onto things that do other things. They're not so great when you just play a spell that says gain 6 life, gain 8 life, to gain 10 life, because if you're not increasing your board position at all, then the same thing that was going to deal you 6 damage this turn is just going to deal you 6 damage next turn anyway. So you're not getting ahead. So a lot of new players, when they're in that I play bad cards phase that we're trying to jump you right through, will make a deck that's based entirely around life gain. And then they don't understand when they still lose. Because if you're not doing anything to the board, your opponent who would have done 20 damage to you over 3 turns is going to do 60 damage to you over 9 turns. It's not going to matter if you're not stopping him from doing whatever he's doing anyway. But again, when it's stapled onto another card, then it's fine. For example, Kitchen Finks might be my favorite Magic card ever. For 3 mana, you get a 3-2. When he comes into play, you gain 2 life, and he has Persist, which means when he dies, he automatically comes back again for free, only now he's -1/-1, smaller than he was before. So for 3 mana, you basically get 2 dudes and 4 life. That's amazing. That card, I jam that card into every single deck that I ever possibly can. White is also the best color for Wrath effects, which, like I said before, Wrath of God or Day of Judgment. White is really good at wiping a board, starting all over, killing everything, both your things and their things. Black gets it also to a lesser extent, and red used to get it a lot, but people hated when red did it, because when red did it, it also killed all of your lands. And blowing up all the lands on the board really makes for terrible games, because then you have to start all over again, and it's really boring, and nobody gets to do anything for a lot of turns, so everybody hated it, so they stopped printing those cards, by and large. White also does a lot of removing from the game, or exiling, as they call it nowadays, one of those M10 terminology changes. So when white gets rid of creatures, usually rather than killing it, they will exile it. 90% of the time, it's the exact same thing. A lot of cards can have effects in your graveyard. They can either come back from your graveyard, or they might give a bonus to something else while you're in their graveyard. If they're exiled or removed from the game, then they're not in your graveyard, so they're not counting towards that sort of thing. So for example, to tie back to something I said a minute ago, Kitchen Finks, if it dies and goes to your graveyard, it comes back into play automatically. If you exile it instead, it never gets a chance to come back.
Oh.
So in a lot of cases, exiling something is going to be better than just plain killing it. White also has a secondary ability of artifact or enchantment destruction, and is also pretty good at pumping up all of your creatures at once. There's a lot of white cards. There's one called Honor of the Pure. It costs 2 mana. It's an enchantment, and all your white creatures get +1/+1 forever, as long as it's on the board. So that goes really well with their having a lot of small dudes, because now instead of having, 4-2-2s, you've got 4-3-3s, which is a lot more powerful. If you're playing a color that only plays fewer guys, but they're bigger, that sort of pump effect isn't going to be as good, obviously. Next is blue. Blue is the most maligned of colors. People tend to hate blue, especially when they're newer. Because blue is the color of permission. Counterspells are blue's thing, and it used to do them really well. Recently, counterspells that they printed have been really terrible. It leads to a lot of people like me whining at Wizards, just constantly like writing them snarky emails about how they made blue suck and it's not fair. Wizards, however, is not going back on it because they've done studies about this. People, for some reason, really don't like having their spells countered. they've done.
Don't say.
You're new at this too, so maybe you can make this make sense to me, because every time I read it, I just sit there and I'm like, it just makes my brain hurt. If you play a guy and you go and you're like, I'm going to play Vampire Nighthawk, and I go, no, I'm going to play a counterspell on that, and then your guy doesn't get to come out, he goes to your graveyard, right? But if you go, I'm going to play a Vampire Nighthawk, and I go, okay, and your Vampire Nighthawk comes into play, and then I immediately go, I'm going to Lightning Bolt your Vampire Nighthawk. He dies. How is that better?
Well, look, the way I see it is that I at least feel like I accomplished something. Like, you just are smacking me before I even get out of the gate. You know what I mean?
And that's what Wizards says that all of these people say, but it still doesn't make any sense to me. The end result was exactly the same, no matter how you went about it. But I guess, they're not making it up. I guess some people really feel that way. I don't know.
I'm gonna be like, well, why am I even trying? Because I didn't even get to play a guy yet.
Way the guy died anyway. He still didn't do anything.
At least I got him out there, I tried.
Like he just walked into,
stepped on the pressure panel or whatever as soon as he came in instead. I don't know. Well, there you go. So that right there is why people hate blue. They think that having their spells countered is no fun. I think that it's no less fun than having my stuff lightning bolted as soon as it hits the board, but whatever. Blue is also the color of card draw, which is good because card draw equals card advantage, which is a number one, double thumbs up, super best way to play the game, in my opinion. Blue,
why? You can only have so many at one time, right?
That's true. You can only have 7 cards at one time. I want to save most of this for the card advantage section.
Okay.
No, it's fine. I'm glad you're bringing things up. It's that way. It's not just me here wanking for an hour or however long we're doing this. So the real brief version is Magic is a game of options. And if you have more options than your opponent does, you're probably going to end up winning. And options are cards. So the more cards that you have in your hand, the more options you have to do stuff to him, the fewer options he has, the better position you're going to be in. Interestingly enough, card draw is the other reason that people hate blue. Because what it seems like everything you do, the blue player has an answer for, because they've got a million cards in their hand. People also seem to hate that for some reason. As far as removal, like I said, white does exiling. Blue doesn't really do any of that. Blue has the worst removal probably tied for green with the worst removal in the game. All it can really do is bounce, which is vernacular for I take something that you have on the board and I make it go back to your hand. So it's a temporary solution, however it leads to card disadvantage, because I've used a card to put another card back into your hand. So now I have minus a card in my hand, but you got one back. So it's a stopgap kind of solution. This ties into tempo, which is also something that we'll talk about.
Well, yeah, that's silly, because then you can just use it on me again later.
Exactly. So that's why blue removal is not as good as white or black or red. But it does have its uses, which again is something that I'll bring up, especially in the tempo section. Blue also is the main flying color. However, it also, even though it has the most guys who fly, it has the fewest dudes hands down. Blue is the weakest creature color. Because historically, it was because it did all these other things so much better, because it had counter spells and it had draw spells and all this sort of thing. If you gave it awesome creatures, too, then it just really wouldn't be fair. This has been alleviated a little bit recently. Blue's getting one of the better creatures in Standard right now is Sphinx of Jawar Isle, who is just a blue guy, and he goes in a lot of decks. He is a 5/5 flyer for 6 mana, which years ago would have been unheard of with another ability on top of it. But he also has Shroud, which means he can't be targeted by anything, which makes him really, really difficult to kill. And he also lets you look at the top of your library at any time you want to, which is cool because it lets you know what's coming up. There's lots of library manipulation stuff where you can look at the top card of your library and you're like, oh, that sucks, I don't want that. And you can do something to shuffle it away. Maybe you can then get a card that's worthwhile or whatever, which is another thing that blue does pretty well. Blue also mills. Milling is a slang term for when you take cards from your opponent's library and you put them directly into their graveyard. Milling is really bad. And milling is another thing that people who are new to the game love. They just,
why is that bad?
This, see, there you go. New player thinks that milling sounds great. When I say milling is bad, it's partially a snobby, elitist thing.
Okay.
I used to have a mill deck back in the day, too, when I, again, was really bad at this game. And it's not... It can, in certain situations, be a legitimate strategy. But there is a reason that it is... Okay, here's the basic breakdown for why milling is bad. And again, I was going to get into this a little more later, but I can give a really brief rundown. Usually you're going to start with how many cards in your deck?
7.
No, that's your hand. How many cards are in your deck?
Oh, I don't know how many is in my deck.
It's usually 60. You can play more than that, but 90% of the time you want to play 60 cards. Right?
Okay, I'll take notes. 60
yeah,
cards.
60.
Okay.
How many life do you start with?
20.
Okay. So, being as we're both accountants, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you can tell that 60 is significantly more than 20.
Right.
Somewhere on the order of 3 times as many, even.
Yes.
So, getting your opponent to 0 life or getting your opponent to 0 cards, either way wins you the game, right? So why would you go through all the hassle of getting rid of 60 of something when you can only get rid of 20 of something?
Okay. But isn't it good, though, just to get rid of things that you don't want bothering you?
That is another reason that people think milling is awesome, but is...
I'm a great example.
Exactly. See, I knew you would be great for this. However, mathematically, that doesn't hold up. And I will put that off towards a later episode, probably, and actually giving all the proofs and equations as to why it doesn't.
Okay.
Just statistically, that actually doesn't matter generally. But again, I wasn't really prepared to go into this right now, so I don't have any of the my normally immaculate research has not been done. So we'll put that off till another time. It is a very good topic for discussion, though, because a lot of people love milling to death, and it causes people like me to just roll their eyes and then kick the crap out of them with a real deck that actually plays Magic instead.
With Snobby Steve.
Exactly. So the last thing that I have here about blue is, I've already mentioned it quite a bit. People hate to play against blue, by and large. And then there's dickheads like me who love to play blue. And I'm not really biased. I'll play every color. I'm not the kind of guy who only plays one archetype or whatever. But blue is really a lot of fun to play for me because it gives you so many options and it restricts so many of your opponent's options that it makes it a lot easier to outplay them. It just generally makes them easier to win. You have just having options is so awesome. Like, if I can be at any point in a game and I can have 8 cards in my hand or 2 cards in my hand, I would rather be the deck that has 8 cards in its hand. But like I said, some people can't stand it. And part of it is justified, because blue has historically been the best color in the game by miles. Like, nothing else is even close. If you go to formats where you can play pretty much all the cards that have ever been printed, Legacy and Vintage, blue is... It's not even a contest. Blue is easily the most represented color, because counter magic and card draw are so ludicrously powerful, especially back then, when they didn't know what they were doing when they first started making this game. So they... In the very first set, they printed a card called Ancestral Recall. For 1 blue mana, at instant speed, you get to draw 3 cards. When you're new to the game, it doesn't sound that impressive.
No, I'm not impressed.
Exactly. But that is probably the best spell ever printed in the history of Magic the Gathering. It is absurdly powerful. There are games of Legacy, or Vintage rather, where that card is so good you're only allowed to play one of it in Vintage, which is the most powerful format in the whole game. You're only allowed to play one of it. And basically, if you are playing against somebody and you resolve that spell in Legacy, you will win. People play cards in their decks just to make sure that you don't play Ancestral Recall. And this, again, is something that we can discuss more when we get into card advantage and permission. But another reason that people hate blue, besides they don't like having their cards countered, and they don't like having no cards when their opponent has a full grip, is that blue was so good for so long that people just kind of have this residual. You know how, like, people hate the Yankees just because they're the Yankees. Like, blue is just blue, and so everybody's like, ah! You know, when you sit down across from that guy at the PTQ and he, you know, like, plays an island, you're like, oh, shit. Like that. So next is black. Black is the best color at killing creatures. It's really good at it. Ironically enough, it's bad at killing creatures that are also black, which makes for some interesting dichotomy. Black is also the color of discard. Discard is when you make your opponent discard cards from their hand before they even get a chance to play them. Which, interestingly enough, is another thing that people really hate to have happen to them. But I love to do. Ruining someone's hand, not even giving them a chance to play the cards, just makes everything so much easier. Black also does card draw. It's the secondary card draw color. It's generally not as good as blue, because with black there is always a price attached to drawing your cards. Usually you have to lose life when you draw your cards. With black, sometimes instead you have to sacrifice a creature or do something else. But drawing cards is so powerful that that's often really not all that much of a drawback. Something, I don't know that I'm going to get to it this episode because I've been yapping a lot more than I anticipated that I would, but a card that I want to talk about in depth is Dark Confidant and why it is one of the best cards ever printed. Black also does life loss, whereas most other colors will do damage. Life loss is interesting. This is as it applies to other players, by the way. it really doesn't do damage to creatures either. It'll just say, destroy this creature, or this creature gets -3/-3 till end of turn, and then again, if that makes their toughness 0, then they die anyway. But life loss can't be prevented. There are certain cards, especially in white, that say, you know, prevent the next 5 damage done to you this turn. So if somebody points a lightning bolt at you, which just does 3 damage to you, you can use that to prevent it. But life loss can't be prevented. It always happens. And that usually doesn't matter. 90% of the time it's going to be the same thing as taking damage, but it is something to keep in mind. Red is the color of burn, which is slang for cards that just do a bunch, that just do damage directly. Like I just said, lightning bolt, it's 1 red mana for an instant. Does 3 damage to our creature player. Easily one of the best spells probably in Magic's history. It was so good that they didn't make it for about 12 years. This summer, they reprinted it for the first time in 12 years, and everybody collectively crapped their pants.
I remember that.
Yeah, see? it goes in basically every deck that plays red in standard. It's that amazing. Red also does haste creatures, which means they are not summoning sick, which means they can attack or do tap abilities the turn they come in. Red is also the color that blows up your opponent's lands, which is another thing that they found out that people despise, and so they've stopped doing it, or rather they've stopped making it good. We went from way back when the game first came out, there were multiple cards that only cost 2 mana to destroy a land. Nowadays you can't get one for less than 4 mana, no matter what you do, because when you blow up everybody's lands, they can't play spells, and that just makes people angry, just like them getting countered or whatever in the first place. Bobby is staring at me and nodding knowingly, while at the same time giving me a horrified kind of face. Like, oh my god, you're actually going through with this thing. I thought you guys were just full of it. And now he's nodding at me again and walking away. So, the last thing I wanted to mention about red is, red actually has the complete backwards connotation from blue, where snobby kind of players, ironically enough, the kind who usually like to play blue, think that red is for noobs or scrubs or people who can't play Magic properly, because rather than actually having to think through your decisions, think about, oh, am I going to play this, or what if he has this, or whatever, if you play red, there's this conception that you can just go, oh, lightning bolt your face, and then lightning bolt your face, and then I play this guy that swings at your face, and then I lightning bolt your face, and then you play that guy, and I lightning bolt that guy, and then I swing with my guys again. And it's just a race to try to get you to 20 as fast as you can. I love all colors equally, man. We should all get together, free love and such. Black is my favorite color, but I'm not opposed to playing any color. But you do see this kind of, you know, people. I was hearing a story today. I was listening to a podcast with Michael J. Flores and Brian David Marshall, and something came up. They were talking about how BDM was talking to this player, Gavin Vary. I probably butchered his name. I hope he doesn't listen to this and think that I'm an asshole. But he had just qualified for his Pro Tour, and he was asking BDM what deck he wanted to play, and BDM was telling him about this red deck that had been testing really well. And Gavin looked at him and said, I'm not going to be playing a red deck at my first ever Pro Tour. Are you out of your mind? Like, that kind of bias against, you know, people will be looking down at you from, they'll, like, remove their monocle and, like, wipe it down with their kerchief and be like, oh my, like, if you start throwing lightning bolts at somebody's face in a serious game. An interesting thing about that is, as much as blue players like to think that red is for mindless newbies, red and blue, by the way, are an opposite pairing. They hate each other. There are a lot of cards of each that fight the other one, but you can also kick the crap out of a lot of blue players just by playing lightning bolts and lava spikes and other, quote, terrible red cards. So it's something to keep in mind. So it's probably also kind of like a mommy issue kind of thing where they get their ass kicked by red constantly, so they have to decry people who play red as losers who don't know how to play real Magic or whatever. But again, at this point, you've only really played green and white cards, I believe. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, so you don't even get really any of the dichotomy that we've been going about. Anyway, so that leads to green, the last color. Green is the color of big, dumb idiots. Green
that
plays...
That hurts my feelings, Steve.
I'm sorry?
I said that hurts my feelings.
Not the players. Although, interestingly enough, the same blue players who hate red also a lot of times hate green. for a lot of the same reasons, because they think, oh, you know, green, you don't actually have to think about anything. You just play some huge guy, and then you turn it sideways, and then you turn it sideways again. But, you know, that's a legitimate part of the game. That's what they do. So green has the biggest creatures. They have the second most creatures after white also, but green's creatures are significantly larger. Green dudes also have trample more than any other color, which, if there's one ability, I think that you've seen how awesome it can be.
I really like trample.
In our game so far is trample, because, you know, I believe at one point she had, like, a Behemoth Sledge on a Wolfbriar Elemental, while she also had, like, two Kasali Pride Mages on the board. And, you know, I'm staring back at her with, like, a 2-1 Vampire, and I'm like, oh, seems good. You know, that, like, there's almost no way to stop that kind of crap. But so, big guys, trample. Green is also the best color for mana ramp and fixing. You can get to... the general rule of the game is, you know, you get to play one land a turn, right? So generally, you would think on turn 5, you could only have 5 mana at most. But green lets you break that rule a lot. So you have things like called ramp decks, where you just, for the first 4 or 5 turns of the game, you just play spells that get you more mana out. And then you can, on turn 5, when your opponents are playing things that cost 4 or 5, you start playing guys that cost 8 or 9, and you just crush them underneath the weight. Green also does single creature pump. Like, I remember when I was trying to explain a lot of things to you the first game. Do you remember the card that I kept bringing up over and over and over again?
I do. I don't remember what it was called, but I remember what it looked like.
Giant Growth?
Yeah.
Cause
I remember I thought it was a funny name.
Right. Green does that a lot. Just makes, like, a single guy bigger. Unlike white, which is better at making lots of guys bigger. Although green does that also. Green also makes a lot of creature tokens.
My wolves.
Right, exactly, like your wolves from the Master of the Wild Hunt, or the wolves from the Wolfbriar Elemental, or Bestial Menace puts a snake, a wolf, and an elephant into play.
Weird combination.
I know, it's totally awesome, though. I have an Elder Dragon Highlander deck, where my general's Ulash to the Hateseed, who is a legendary creature, a Hydra Hellion, which is one of the coolest creature type lines ever in the game. But he just spits out Sapperlings. Which are little, like, plant dudes. And he can just make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Sapperlings. And that's something that green does very well. Green is also the primary enchantment color. And then the last thing that I have down here is why snobs also hate green. Basically, I already went over it, but it's the same kind of thing as red. You know, a lot of... The other thing is, and we'll talk about this when we get to deck archetypes, but white and blue are traditionally control colors, with black kind of on the outside of that, whereas red and green are traditionally the more aggro, or like, I attack you with guys kind of colors. And so there's that dichotomy there, where control players think that they're better than aggro players because, you know, their spells are more complex, or, you know, they think that they have to think things through, where aggro players just throw things down and then attack them and don't have to actually think through what they're doing.
And I'm going to refer back to D&D, how I always play the stabby slashy guy and the magic user for that very reason.
Exactly. Well, there you go.
Too much thought.
And, you know, it's not to, you know, be a snob or whatever, even though I am a little bit, but there's definitely something to be said for that, because when you... Competitive magic is a very complex, difficult thing. There's always a million things you got to be thinking about whenever you're playing. And when you get into a tournament situation, there's added pressure on top of that. You know, you got to make sure you're not breaking any tournament rules in addition to any game rules. You know, you got to worry, oh, if I lose this match, then this whole thing was for, you know, whatever. So you've got all kinds of stresses bearing down on you anyway. So if you're playing a deck that then on top of all that, you're like, oh, I've got these 13 different cards and I don't know which one's the right one to play, you're just piling even more stress, you know, skills. Right, and wringing your brain out even more. And if you just play a deck where you're like, oh, I play this guy and then I attack with this guy, it lets you, you know, you don't get fatigued as easily. You can keep going for longer. You don't have to go into the tank for 20 minutes to decide, you know, this is the land I'm going to play. You just go, oh, I play a land and I play this dude. So there is definitely something to be said for that also. It's, you know, again, I don't think that any way is a better way to play than any other way. These are just things I think that I should point out to somebody who is starting out. Then there are artifacts, which usually are colorless. Last block, we started getting color artifacts for the first time ever, which was new and interesting. But for the most part, they're colorless, which means they can go into anything, which is neat, but it also means that they are generally clunkier or less efficient to do the same sorts of things that colored spells would be, because otherwise there would be no reason to play colors. You know, if you had an artifact spell that drew cards just as well as a blue spell does, then why would you bother playing blue? You could just graph that on anything. So artifacts tend to let you do all sorts of things, but they don't usually do any one thing incredibly well. They also usually interact very well with blue, which is another reason that blue is historically the most powerful color, because not only is card drawing and permission ludicrously powerful in older formats, but it also, you get all these neat things that let you interact with artifacts, which you can take any artifact from anywhere, basically, because there's no color requirement. You can graft it onto anything, but blue actually does it better. A classic example is the card Tinker. it's a spell that costs 3 mana. When you play it, you have to sacrifice an artifact, but then you get to go through your deck for any artifact that you want and put it right into play. So you can take some stupid crummy artifact that might have been important on, like, turn one, but now, like, you don't care or whatever. It was something that you just used at the beginning of the game. And on turn three, you can sacrifice it and turn it into, for example, a Darksteel Colossus, who is an 11-11 indestructible with trample. So you can get that guy into play on turn three, which is pretty good. So that's one of the, so again, that's part of the whole blue artifact interactions colors. And then there's lands. Lands tap for mana, obviously. But they also do all sorts of other things. You can have lands that not only tap for one color of mana, but some of them tap for two colors of mana.
I had some of those last time.
Exactly. And you also had Stirring Wildwood, which in addition to tapping for two colors of mana, can turn into a guy.
Right, that's awesome.
Exactly. Man lands are pretty incredible. But then you've got, so that's like a spell, like ability kind of on a land. It turns into a guy. There are also lands throughout history that have, you know, that can do other things. There's one that can take artifacts from your graveyard and put them back on top of your library. It's called Academy Ruins, and it's one of those cards where there are entire decks based around it. Because you can just, you know, you get one artifact out, like Engineered Explosives is a good example. There are a lot of extended decks where you get Academy Ruins on the board, and Engineered Explosives is, it's kind of complicated, but basically you pay it, you play it for however much mana you want to, and then you can sacrifice it, and you destroy everything on the board that costs as much mana as you paid to play the Engineered Explosives. And you have to sacrifice it when you do that, so it goes to your graveyard. But then, if you have an Academy Ruins, you can flip it back on top of your library, draw it again next turn, and then anything else that your opponent has played, you can just play it and blow it up again. So infinitely recursive engineered.
That's cheating.
and Talarian, Academy Ruins, rather, is, can you guess what color it's most closely associated with?
Blue?
Ah, very good. another reason people hate blue. It's very good at being a bastard. Lands are ludicrously important, and a lot of new players tend not to really realize it. They think that, you know, like, lands are just a thing that you put in your deck so I can play my awesome Crawl Worm. Or whatever. But lands, and making sure you have the right lands and the right number of lands, is one of the most painfully difficult things to do right. There's one of the decks in the Pro Tour last week is called Mythic. It was created by Zvi Mishovowitz. I'm butchering his name too, I'm sure, but just a legendary Magic player. And he came out of retirement, basically, to play this deck at the most recent Pro Tour. And he basically said that the man lands that were printed in Worldwake, like the Stirring Wildwood and the Celestial Colonnade, were the impetus for this entire deck. If those cards hadn't been printed, this deck would not work. So it's amazing how something that a lot of people just think of as an afterthought can actually be the entire backbone of a deck. And if you don't do it properly, then things aren't going to work out right. This has been going for quite a while at this point.
I know, right? I was just thinking that, too.
So, again, I talk a lot. so we didn't even get to deck archetypes yet.
That's 0.7 on the list.
That is 0.7 on the the outline that I came up with for this. And again, I kind of had a feeling that I might just, because I don't know if those of you who may be listening at home can tell this, but I really like talking about Magic.
So I was just thinking how great this must be, because this is what you would just do anyway.
This is what I do when I'm sitting in bed trying to fall asleep. I'm just talking to myself about this sort of thing.
Anyway.
Yeah, so it's nice to have an audience of at least one. Hopefully more. Okay, so I think we're going to stop it there for now, because I've blabbed an awful lot. I hope that you've enjoyed what you've heard. We're going to try to do this about every week, and I hope that, you listen in and come along and enjoy it with us. If you like what you heard, if there's something you would like to hear, if you just think that we're terrible and should stop doing this, whatever. I just want to hear something to know that somebody has downloaded this thing. So please, get in contact with us. Let us know what you think. You can get in touch with us in the following ways. I have created a Gmail email address for this. It is pursuitofknowledgepodcast@gmail.com, spelled just like the card or like any self-respecting, God-fearing English-speaking person would write it. Somebody already took pursuitofknowledge@gmail.com.
What?
I know, right? That's what I said.
Well, let's email them and tell them.
Yeah, I probably should.
Stuff.
Kind of like that. Well, I probably shouldn't say that on the air. This is supposed to be a family podcast.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. If anybody's curious, you can ask me, and I'll let you know. But I'd rather not get booted off of the MTGcast network on the first episode. Suffice to say, I was looking for an AIM screen name and was unable to procure it because somebody had beaten me to it. But anyway, so if you want to send your email to pursuitofknowledgepodcast@gmail.com, we will both get that. Alternately, you can find me on AIM on butt ailments, just like it sounds. I am a supremely gross person, by the way. But yeah, just like it sounds, BUTTAILMENTS. My Magic Online name is Space Marine Killa. So feel free
with an A,
to.
Not an ER.
With an A, yeah, correct. Space Marine KILLA. and my Twitter is Procrastinarian, spelled in a way that I don't want to try to say it because I'm going to screw it up terribly. Actually, let me go to my site and then I will be able to just read it off. This will all, by the way, be in the notes, so if you don't want to, try to, scribble this down as you're hearing me talk, you can actually just look at the notes on the site, and it'll tell you. But PROCRASTINARIAN on Twitter. Most of the stuff that I tweet about is just stupid magic crap, but occasionally it's about something more exciting, like being stripped naked and shoved into a dark room while a bunch of people take pictures or whatever. And how can they get a hold of you if they would like to?
I'm pretty much just Empress Kira V everywhere. Empress, like a female emperor. And then Kira, which is K-Y-R-A and V, and then that's the end. My website is that, EmpressKiraV.com. There's nothing there right now. I've had it for like 5 years, and there's still nothing on it except a picture of me, because these people, they think I'm vain or something. And then, AIM and Twitter and Blogger and all that crap, it's just exactly the same. EmpressKiraV. I'm pretty easy to find.
So there you go. Yeah, really anything, even if it's, hate mail, whatever. I just want to know that somebody is looking at it and listening to it. And if you have constructive criticism, all the better. But even if not, whatever, just validate my existence, please.
Me too.
Yeah, see, she needs it even more than I do. I hope you liked the first episode. I hope you will be back for the second episode. And
Peace out,
everybody. Bye.
Remain conscious, refraining from commenting on the lame compliments and the petty criticisms from those who ain't accomplished even one-fifth of some of the shit I made progress with. I'm leaving naysayers stumped like rainforests after years of pulling rabbit ears out my pants pockets. I'm not revealing any tricks or trades, just there ain't no magic in the breakdown, baby. Laughing and make almost beautiful.